but he recovered quickly.
Nobody talks to me like that, Sonny.
I do. You may be the patriarch of this corporation, but it's time for a new generation to take the leadership of Tricontinental.
New leadership? Meaning you?
Of course. Al-Bashir made a frosty smile. Oh, you can remain as chairman of the board. I wouldn't humiliate you by voting you out. But you must understand that I have the votes, and if necessary, I will call on them.
Why, you...
Garrison stopped himself before he began uttering the string of epithets that heaped into his mind. Instead, he said,
I've made this company what it is. I've brought it up from nothing, from a dinky little wildcat outfit drilling holes out in West Texas.
Smiling like a rattler, Al-Bashir said, you inherited a profitable company at a time when the oil industry was booming. You rode the wave quite successfully, I admit. But it took no great genius to achieve what you have.
If I could stand on my feet...
You can't, and we both know it. Times are changing, old man, and Tricontinental must change with them. I will see to that. Garrison stared at the man, his chest heaving, his heart thundering.
Come, come, Al-Bashir said, his smile warming slightly. We shouldn't be enemies. We both want the same thing. Power and profits for Tricontinental Oil.
And you make all the decisions, Garrison muttered.
Most of them will be exactly as you would make them, I assure you.
Except for this goddamn Chinese coal business.
In the long run, Chinese coal will make our oil more valuable, not less. Every ton of coal we sell in Asia this year means thousands of barrels of oil we can sell at higher prices in years to come.
The goddamn environmentalists don't like coal.
That's of no consequence, Al-Bashir said. Besides, oil is crucial to the petrochemical industry. It's much too valuable to burn.
By Christ, you sound like that panty-waist Shah of Iran.
Pahlavi? He was right about that.
A lot of good it did him.
Al-Bashir dismissed the subject with an impatient wave of his hand. No matter. We must think of the future.
Like this power satellite contraption?
Yes, Al-Bashir replied, his tone changing noticeably. The power satellite is important to my plans. The two men stared at each other for a long, silent moment. Garrison, wrinkled, old, slumped in his wheelchair but determined to hold on to his power. Al-Bashir, smooth, elegant, obviously enjoying this moment of revealing his true strength. At length, Garrison said,
The reason I asked about your travel plans was I wanted to know if you could be in Austin this Saturday.
Why should I go to Austin? Al-Bashir asked with just a touch of haughtiness.
The governor of Texas is going to announce that he's running for president.
Scanwell?
Morgan Scanwell, said Garrison. And he's going to make energy independence a big part of his platform.
Al-Bashir stroked his beard absently. Garrison could see the wheels turning behind his eyes. Energy independence, he murmured. Pointing a bony finger, Garrison asked,
I want to know what your real reason is for wanting to buy into Randolph's power satellite.
For just the flash of an instant, Al-Bashir's eyes flared, and Garrison said to himself, Aha! There is something going on. Quickly regaining his composure, Al-Bashir said smoothly, I believe it is important for Tricontinental to diversify. Coal, nuclear power, natural gas, even this far-out idea of a power satellite. We should be involved in every form of energy production.
Save your pretty speeches for the public relations, Flax, Garrison snapped. What's the real reason?
Al-Bashir smiled, revealing teeth so perfect that they had to be the result of expensive orthodontics.
Well? Garrison demanded.
Very well, then. Al-Bashir hunched forward slightly. Garrison leaned toward him and placed both his liver-spotted hands on his desktop. As I told you, Tricontinental is in the energy business, not merely oil, Al-Bashir said in a near whisper. It is vital to our long-term interests to control as much of the energy market as possible, not merely oil.
We must control all the possible competitors against oil, and that includes Randolph and his power set.
Control them, Garrison muttered.
Al-Bashir nodded gravely. Yes. Not merely invest in them. Not merely dabble in them. We must control the world's energy supplies.
And he closed his right hand into a tight, hard fist. He's right, Garrison said to himself. The sumbitch is right. And now he's out in the open. He thinks he can shove me aside, make me into a figurehead. He wants power, pure and simple, and he's smart about getting it. But he's dead wrong if he thinks I'm going to lay down and let him walk over me.
As Al-Bashir rode in his limousine back to his hotel suite, he called his travel secretary to cancel his meeting in Singapore and make accommodations for him in Austin for the weekend. Folding his cell phone and slipping it into his jacket pocket, he picked up the intercom microphone. Up front, on the other side of the soundproof glass partition, his chauffeur glanced into the rearview mirror at him. Roberto, the business of the Astro technician must be finished. The chauffeur nodded. You say that Randolph is tracking down the same leads that Tenney followed. Sooner or later he will find our man.
Yeah, the pigeon's getting pretty damn spooked. He wants more money so he can leave the country.
Give him what he wants. Then terminate him when he least expects it.
Right.
And make it look like an accident this time. No more explosions.
Al-Bashir could see little more of Roberto in the rearview mirror than his dark eyes. It seemed to him that Roberto smiled. You wanted to make people think that hydrogen stuff is dangerous, didn't you? That blast knocked off two targets all at one time.
This Latino is becoming impertinent, Al-Bashir thought. But he smiled back and said mildly, No more explosions. I want the man's death to look like a suicide. From remorse.
Yeah, sure, said Roberto grudgingly as he swung the limousine into the hotel's busy driveway.
Matagorda Island, Texas. The setting sun was low enough to send a shaft of light lancing through Dan's office window. He saw that it was in Lynn Van Buren's eyes, making the woman squint painfully, so he got up and lowered the blinds.
Phew! Thanks, said the engineer.
Why didn't you say something?
She grinned at him.
Didn't have to, Chief. You caught my body language. Lynn Van Buren was an unlikely engineer. Her education at Caltech had been in biophysics, with a minor in mathematics. She'd been an experimentalist, a lab rat who enjoyed getting her hands dirty and tinkering with bulky equipment that frustrated less patient researchers. She got into the engineering end of the business when she started working on biophysics experiments that were going to be performed in space, completely automated after riding into orbit aboard a rocket booster. In time, she found herself more fascinated by the rockets than by what they carried. She was one of the earliest hires when Dan started Astro Manufacturing Corporation. Within the first year of the company's operation, she became Joe Tenney's top assistant. Lynn Van Buren sat before Dan's desk now, a feisty grin on her face. She was in her early 40s, short and chunky, dimpled chin, her mouse brown hair cut short, her hazel eyes bright with good-humored intelligence. She was wearing a dark blue pantsuit with an incongruous string of pearls around her neck.
So, what's the latest from Hangar B? Dan asked.
That's why I wanted to see you, Chief. Number 2's ready to fly.
Despite everything, Dan broke into a smile.
She's ready? We did the final checkout this afternoon. I just had to rush over and tell you in person.
Dan's elation quickly faded. The FAA won't be finished with their investigation until hell freezes over.
They won't let you fly her until they're done?
Yep. Can't say I blame them.
Van Buren's expression turned crafty.
Even if the flight's crewless?
Unmanned? Dan asked.
Crewless, Van Buren replied firmly. We can fly the bird remotely. We did it for the first one, remember?
Before Hannah took it up.
Right. So the FAA won't stop you from flying it crewless, will they?
Dan mulled it over for a moment.
I don't know. I'll have to talk to Passo about it.
Near midnight,
The hangar was quiet and deserted.